All right, I'm actor, writer, director, and sometimes DJ Diallo Riddle.
And I'm producer, DJ, and songwriter Luxury, a.k.a. the guy who talks about interpolation on the internet.
And whispers about it, too.
I do.
Guilty. This one song today, oh my God, we're talking about a postmodern, transcendent, genre-bending smash hit.
Oh, well said. That's right, Diallo. It's a song built on a bedrock of samples from disco records, funk, jazz, exotica, a whole potpourri of different sources.
And it's didn't let me go in the exotica section.
I was behind a curtain, like yeah. a beaded curtain. Yeah, kids weren't allowed back there. It's not just the samples that are all over the map. So was the band. They drew on their influences from Asia, Europe, and the East Village.
And don't forget Queens. The hip-hop in the song comes via Queens. This song features cameos from a hip-hop luminary and a funk icon. It was ranked by Pitchfork and VH1 as one of the best songs of the 90s. It's often called out as one of the decade's best party tunes. Rolling Stone, they can't be wrong. They listed it as one of the 500 best songs of all time. And as a DJ who's done more weddings than I can count, it's still a feel-good classic that gets the over 40s people to the dance floor.
That's right. You're listening to one song. The Atlantic rated the 23rd best podcast in the world. I will stop milking that.
No. We're number 23
now.
Like Jordan. Let's keep milking.
I'm enjoying milking that. And the song we're talking about today is D-Light's Groove is in the Heart.
Dig. Thanks to the U.S. Soy and the United Soybean Board for the sustainable makeover of our podcast studio and for sparking discussions on greener Hollywood production. Just like notes in a song, sustainable living is just a series of small, eco-friendly choices that contribute to the melody. Check out the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how they pulled the whole look together. It's all on At Heartbeat Audio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. Next, don't give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. And that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Next, don't give it to you. Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Give up. Order now at Acura.com.
I love that song. Okay, so look, I know you have a lot of personal history with this song.
This is such a key song for me.
I believe.
Can't wait to talk about it.
I can't wait to talk about it. It's released in the summer of 1990, and it's easily the song of the summer. This song went number one in several countries and ruled the Billboard dance chart. How did you first hear this song, and what's going on in your life back then?
I mean, this song came out when I was just starting my freshman year of college. I'm in Washington, D.C. I'm the music director at my school. Or working at the radio station, at least. This is relevant
because... Music director at the school?
I was going to soon be the music director, but I was at the radio station, the point of which is we get all these free records. Mm-hmm. So I got the World Click record. That's D-Light's debut album. I actually got it like very early on in the school year. And while this was happening, we were also, all me and my friends were going to Trax, which is this legendary gay nightclub just outside of D.C. So my experience coming into college in this moment was like, house music was starting to happen and was starting to be a thing that I was exposed to. Mm-hmm. And it was also starting to be on the pop charts with D-Light's Groove is in the Heart. Madonna's Vogue is also in the same year. So this is an interesting moment where there's a crossover happening, basically.
Absolutely.
But I'm also kind of in the trenches a little bit where, in retrospect, it's kind of so cool that I got to be there, because at the time, like, we'd see this guy named Kevin Aviance, and everyone would be like all starstruck about him. And he sort of turned into a legendary, like, RuPaul, like, drag icon in the later years. And in fact, he put out a record. I will say the name of it. If we have to bleep it out, so be it. But he put out the record Cunty. Which Beyonce sampled on Renaissance.
Which song was that?
The song is...
Pure
Honey. That's right. Yeah.
That song.
It should cost a billion to look this. I see you want it and you're coming for me. Don't be funny.
So this person was just there at this club that we would go to, and we would sort of worship him from afar. all this to say that, like, this was a moment for me where electronic music was itself in the world beginning to happen in dance music in this new way, with house music being starting to filter out from its origins in Chicago. Yeah. And it hit my ears. It hit the radio's ears. It hit Madonna's ears. So it's all kind of like crossing over.
Everybody. I feel like everybody was really into this song. And look, you know, like, admittedly, I'm in junior high, I think, when this song comes out. And so my only interaction with it was really through MTV. But I remember the second I saw it, it just seemed like this really
That
cool
video is
world.
So amazing.
The video is iconic.
It's iconic. Yeah.
If you remember it at the time and you haven't thought about it in a while, go back and look at that video. You will remember things that you have totally not thought about in 30 and 40, very long time.
But also rewatching it, I'd forgotten about how, like, in Zoolander, when they do the, like, Frankie is Hollywood, like, hypnotism
looks
dance,
just like
it's the same thing. It's the round thing behind them. It's the little heads popping up.
The little heads popping in. And I mean, like, I will say the same thing. I feel like, you know, for me, again, digesting this as a young teenager, D-Light, B-52s were doing Love Shack around this time. There was
great
so much, like,
too, yeah.
sort of like Daisy hippie, like, 60s iconography going on.
It's that iconography, but there's also, like, this sort of retro and kitsch factor where there's this sort of 70s and 60s elements that are coming into the music, but with, like, an ironic wink. You know, this is an era,
so many,
like,
winks.
There kind of wasn't, like, irony didn't really exist until, of course, it existed, but, like, as a mass phenomenon, like, people were pretty, like, on the nose in the mainstream. And then you kind of get this sort of, maybe Dave Letterman starts to bring irony to the masses. I'm not really sure what had happened.
Interesting.
But by the time we get to the B-52's Love Shack and D-Light, Groove Is in the Heart, it's like you can kind of read.
The 60s are back. Yeah,
you're kind of able to read that there's a little bit of humor happening with the choice of this, like, funky bass line from disco music, which also sounds cool. So you can kind of have your cake and
eat it too. Well, that's the thing. It's like I said earlier, it's a postmodern song. It's got
a
disco sample. It's got the, you know, I won't jump the gun here, but it's got the jazz sample, let's say, from the soundtrack to the movie Blow Up from the 60s. And again, as a kid, just digesting this video, like, I didn't know who Bootsy Collins was.
Right.
I was like,
I didn't
who's
either.
This
That's
weird
who I was
old
in
black guy
too.
With
right.
the glasses? By the way, he was probably like in his 30s then. But to me, he seemed like he was 100 years
right,
old.
Right, right, right.
You know, I knew Q-Tip because I was, like, you know, into hip hop. I knew A Tribe Called Quest. But, like, I was like, who's the lady in the outfit doing the seductive dance moves? And who are these quirky guys who look like they work at a record store in Atlanta's, you know, Little Five Point? Shout out to Wax and Facts. I used to go there all the time and see people who, like, look like these.
It was like a door
like
opening
an art school
to a whole
had exploded
other world. Right.
Onto an MTV video. Right. It was crazy.
Well said.
I think, by the way, Austin Powers hasn't come out yet. So I feel like there was just a lot of, like, 60s retro. I was also a big Pee Wee Herman fan.
Yeah.
And a lot of the stuff in Pee Wee's Playhouse.
Oh, that's
that
another great example.
TV
You're
show,
right.
Yeah, it looked like it was
kitsch.
Out of a...
That's another kitsch hitting the mainstream example. Great example.
It looked like B-52s
and Devo,
and D-Light.
Devo had sort of been doing it too. Irony wasn't invented, but certainly there were lots of... There's an underground kind of cultural, counterculture, alt-culture thing that was starting to bubble into the mainstream.
Absolutely.
Early 80s, maybe Whip It, you can draw a straight line from Whip It through the B-52s to D-Light, and they're kind of all of a piece of sort of subversive culture, kind of questioning, but also celebrating American pop trash. You know what I mean? All of these things that came before.
And I think this goes towards why we chose this song. One thing we always do on the show is we try to bring to light why these songs we cover matter. What makes them part of this musical Smithsonian we're building.
I love that. That's great.
I would love to visit the musical Smithsonian.
We are the musical Smithsonian. We're the curators of the musical Smithsonian. That's great.
What is so special about Groove Is in the Heart to you? I mean, musically speaking.
Yeah, so just to sort of summarize a little what we've been talking about, we were talking about how the band D-Light, and we'll talk a little bit about the individuals, how they bring their own experiences literally into the music. So their choice of records that they sample and the choice of sounds that they're making comes a lot from their backgrounds. But this is really interesting because it's in this moment where we've just been having big sampley records are happening. I talk about big sampley records all the time because there's this tiny moment where you got sort of in 88, 80, 91, it's when hip-hop has reached kind of an apex as an art form. It's gotten
Absolutely.
To this point
yeah.
where part of the art is the collage of samples phenomenon.
Sure.
So you have Public Enemy, Nation
the
of Millions.
Bomb Squad, yeah.
You have
Some of those
3 Feet
songs
High and Rising.
Like 200 samples in them.
You got 3 Feet High and Rising by De La Soul.
Yep.
You get Paul's Boutique by Beastie Boys. And it's interesting, as I was listening back to this record, I realized you sort of add this to that group because World Click by D-Light. In particular, this song, Groove Is in the Heart, has at least 11 samples that I was able to track.
Yeah.
So that's not something you could really do anymore. This was a moment where the lawsuits basically had not started to hit. So
I feel like even like D-Light Theme, that's a song, like that song sounds like a hip-hop record of the period because of all the
There's a really
looping.
Interesting connection, I think, between hip-hop, which literalizes itself in this song, right? As we'll talk about later when we have our guest 16 Bars, and we'll talk about Q-Tip in a minute. So I think it's really interesting to make that connection. It's also interesting because in this moment, you know, sometimes we talk about how Daft Punk's Pyramid at Coachella in 2006, it was a breakthrough moment culturally because that generation, a certain generation, there had been kind of a gap between the disco demolition in 1980 and 2006 where dance music was a little underground, but it actually popped its head up a couple times in between.
Sure.
Famously, the Chemical Brothers and Prodigy a few years later.
Fatboy Slim.
But in 1990... dance music also popped its head up for a minute with this song. And it's easy to kind of forget that there is a post-disco demolition, disco sucks, America, music, house and disco and everything are underground. And they are, but every now and then they pop their head up for a huge, massive global smash like this song.
Absolutely. I mean, I think about like Heavy D came out around this period with Now That We Found Love, which is basically a house trap.
Right.
And him rapping, hey, you, what we going to do? You know, like there's a lot of hip hop artists jumping onto tracks and that made them edgy. I'm remembering US3 with Cantaloupe and stuff like that. We're not going to talk
about
US3.
One of my least favorite songs of all time.
I know.
Funky.
Everybody's got an opinion on that song.
Jazz and hip hop, dripping in your dome, mix his own and bop.
I think the Blue Note guys really liked it. It was like hip hop that these, you know, old jazz musicians on Blue Note could really get down with. But we say all that just to say that, like, this is the sound of early 90s New York and early 90s dance. In fact, I was reading some of the contemporary reviews of this song, and they call it a house song, which I always considered it more of a disco song, even when it came out then. But because it has like a house BPM.
Right.
It was considered, you know, by some of these, you know, journalists.
And so much of that proto house is just a disco sample with an 808. This is not an 808 drum machine necessarily. Yeah. I'm actually not sure what I take it back. I know that there are no drum machines in this song. So it is technically not a house music track, maybe just because there's no 808 or 909 in the mix.
But
it's interesting
in
you say
UK,
that.
In the UK, it was a double A-side single. And the other side was What Is Love, which sounds like an amazing house
record.
That is a monster.
Sounds like 2024. It could be
absolutely.
Like,
what is love?
Honestly, the whole record, I mean, I have a feeling we might have to touch on the one-hit wonder nature of how this song and this band is perceived. But frankly, World Click still stands the test of time as a great album.
I think we should talk about whether they're a one-hit wonder a little later in the show. Okay, so one thing about this song is that I think everyone of a certain age knows it, but I guess most people know far less about the band. Talk us through it. Who are D-Light, spelled with 3 E's, Luxury, spelled with 2 X's?
So D-Light are a band that form in New York. The nucleus is Lady Miss Keir Kirby, who's...
I'm glad you told me how to pronounce her name, because I was scared to... Keir, it's Keir.
Yeah, Lady Miss Keir, Keir Kirby, from Ohio. It's 1982, and she meets a DJ, DJ Dimitri Brill, who's from Ukraine, but who moved to the U.S. when he was a teenager.
Yeah. And I thought he was the DJ in the band.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. The two of them really form the songwriting nucleus of the band. And it kind of happens accidentally because Dimitri is a DJ. He's on the scene. He's like a resident at all the big hot clubs of the moment. In New York, this is all New York. Early 80s New York City. And so Lady Miss Keir, she comes to be known later. She's a fashion designer and a textile designer. And she's not a musician at all, but they start dating. And one night... they take LSD, and she starts singing. And the next day, Dimitri's like, you have a good voice. We should write some music. And that's the beginning of the two of them starting to write songs together, was this sort of accidental LSD experience of you know, vocal discovery.
Oh, so that's interesting. So, like so many groups, this group sort of grew out of a couple.
Grew out of this accidental LSD experience.
Which also explains the video. I feel like watching that video again. It's a trip.
It's so trippy.
It's a trip.
It's so trippy. It's very psychedelic. They're bringing all that 70s kind of cliche stuff back again, but with a wink, you know, the sort of like, oh my God, what do you call the lamp? The lava lamp. Like all that lava lamp graphics. Like in the 70s, if you ever watched the like Velvet Underground, there's always like a lava lamp video thing going on behind them.
Might be
they bring
my
all
kid's
that back
room.
With a wink and a nod.
Yeah, absolutely.
Another kind of interesting accident that leads to their starting to be a band is, you know, Lady Miskir tells the story about it. She says, in 1986, I found $500 in the back of a cab and bought my first sampler. And that allowed her.
That is the best.
That's so great. And as a non-musician, and by the way, this is in 1986, she had the wherewithal to think, I want to make music, but I'm not a musician.
$500 in a cab in 1986.
And spent it on a sampler.
There was probably tons of residue on that $500.
Let's slow the story down. Let's talk about the $500 in the cab.
I don't know about this $500.
What would you do if you found $500 in a cab?
I don't know, but I think someone got killed when they showed up and they didn't have that $500.
It's true.
Can I just say real quick, super short anecdote. One time, Bashir and I, my writing partner, Bashir and I, went to a nightclub. And as I walked, and we were like in our 20s and flat broke. And as I walked across the dance floor, I saw some money and I just picked it up and I counted it. And it was $260, all in 20s. I felt like a Rockefeller. Like, I can't tell you how many jams that got me out of. Like, it was just like a magic. It was like Mario when he finds a coin. But one of the bricks with lots of coins.
Wait, when you find this money, are you like looking around, or are you like worried someone's going to think you stole it?
Dude, I put that in my pocket so fast. I went, actually, it's a good point. I went to the bar where Bashir was. I was like, dude, we got to get out of here. I was like, we got to go. He's like, what happened? I was like, I'll explain later. I was like, but we just came up. We were roommates at the time, so we ate like kings. Sizzler. We're going to the Sizzler tonight.
Steak, seafood, and salad. Damn, what a combo.
Surf and turf.
So she finds this money in the back of a cab. She buys her first sampler. And again, the wherewithal to think, I'm not a musician, but I want to make music. In 1986, to know to buy a sampler and that piece together songs from that, because it's kind of happening in the world for the first time. Like now we take for granted, you can piece together some samples, some loops, etc.
Are you going to tell me that she and he co-produced this? Because I thought he produced it, and so she was a co-producer.
So it's cool because the name of they formed an entity, like a production entity, called Sampledelic Productions. If you look at the record, it's produced by D-Light, Sampledelic Productions. It's just the two of them.
That all tracks.
And the third person they brought in was DJ Toa Tay,
who I love and have followed for years. We'll talk about that a little bit.
His solo work is great too. He's amazing. He comes into the picture, and what he brings to the table is his record collection as a DJ and as a collector of these more esoteric records. He's a Japanese Korean born DJ who moved to New York and moves to the United States. They all meet on the club scene in the late 80s, and he becomes the third and you know, the missing piece for the band.
He just got into town. I love that story. Yeah. He just got into town, and immediately he's on like the hottest song in the world.
And makes a massive contribution because the story of Groove is in the Heart as a song, Lady Miskir says that she'd actually already had the lyrics written separately. Wow. And then DJ Dimitri Brill was one of his favorite songs to play when he was a DJ. And not to jump the gun a little bit on the stems, but because the stories are merged, the stems are mostly samples outside of the vocals. Here's the song that he would love to play as a DJ in his DJ sets. Yeah. This song is Herbie Hancock, Bring Down the Birds, from the Blow Up soundtrack, if you've seen the movie, Michelangelo Antonioni. So 60s. So go-go. It's a hot tune on its own. I mean, you can understand, but it's so cool that he's playing this, right? Think about the tempo and the sound. Like, that's unusual.
That's a cool party.
That's a cool
party. If you
can
play this and the people don't throw eggs at you, as we know, everybody goes to the club with eggs in their pocket, ready
to
throw.
It's so fast. It's like a 60s go-go jam, 1966.
I love that. That tells me a lot about the parties that he was probably DJing.
Yeah, very
also,
eclectic.
We talk a lot on this show about Quincy Jones and the path that his career took. Mm-hmm. I don't think enough is said about Herbie Hancock. I mean, like, he goes from that era Herbie Hancock to like the jazz fusion, Herbie Hancock that gets sampled more often in hip hop, to like Rocket, which was the first time my ears ever heard scratching.
Me too. Yeah.
So, I mean, like, you know, at some point, we got to give Herbie his flowers.
Oh, my God. Herbie is crucial. He's crucial to the song, too, because not only he's actually the only credited songwriter outside of the band. And Q-Tip for his rap for his 16 bars
justifiably
later on. And he's also got two samples in this song because he's sampled as Herbie Hancock, but one of his other entities, the Headhunters, also appears as one of the samples used in the song.
Oh, I can't wait to hear that.
Yeah. So we'll get into all the samples. Rich with samples. We'll get into that in just a minute. To finish the story of how the band meets So we've got the three of them. They come up with this name, which, you know, clearly has some connection to, I haven't heard them tell the story about, like, that they took it from D-Light Records, which was Cool in the Gang's label.
Oh, that's but right.
But some connection, like, you know, that's, if, wow. if you ever get an old Cool in the Gang record.
Three E's too?
It's with two E's, but it's D-E-Light, L-I-T-E.
So it's very similar.
Probably connection there, but there's also the Cole Porter song.
Somebody was like, for that label, was like, oh, we've got a lawsuit. Gonna get some of that Groove of the Heart money.
Yay. They also probably were connected to the Cole Porter song, It's D-Lovely. You know, there's the song where, there's another song on the record where she says.
Song starts off.
Right. Oh, you're right. It's in the song.
Yeah. How do you say D-Lovely? How do you say
D-Light?
D-Light, yeah. D-Light.
All right, well, after the break, we're gonna play some of the samples from Groove is in the Heart, and I guarantee you, this song has some samples that are absolute chef's kiss. You have not heard them before. We're going to play them. Stay tuned. Thanks to the U.S. Soy and the United Soybean Board for the sustainable makeover of our podcast studio and for sparking discussions on greener Hollywood production. Just like notes in a song, sustainable living is just a series of small, eco-friendly choices that contribute to the melody. Check out the Tears for Fears episode of One Song and see behind-the-scenes clips of how they pulled the whole look together. It's all on at Heartbeat Audio on YouTube, and the link is in our show notes.
While no one knows what tomorrow may bring, Bridgestone is working toward a more positive outlook. With innovations like developing a tire using 75% recycled and renewable materials. It's just one of the many ways Bridgestone is making a difference today for generations to come. Because that's what really matters. Bridgestone, solutions for your journey. Visit whatreallymatters.com to learn more.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. Nexco, give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Biosonic sound experience.
Acura wins Daytona.
And that... That's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it?
Let's go, give it to you.
Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S.
Give up.
Order now at Acura.com.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
All right, welcome back to One Song. All right, so this song is almost entirely built on samples. I know that there's some original vocals that were applied, but like this isn't a case where like the band got in the studio and even really supplied like a bass line or like a guitar there. Like, explain to us like how unusual this song is.
Well, you know, we talked a little bit before about the era of sampliness happening on the hip hop side. It's also been happening, to be fair. It's happening on the electronic side as well. Both the worlds of hip hop and dance music have a big part of their lineage is using, you know, reusing recorded material and adding, you know, drum machines and vocals to that. They've done that in this song. So they're definitely carrying on the tradition of dance music in the post-disco era, in the sort of house. That's kind of what house music starts to do that's new and different, is add 909s in drum machines to loops and vocals. So they've done all that, but actually there isn't even the drum machine.
That's crazy.
That's what's so unusual.
Yeah.
They just purely use
the literally
beats,
made a collage of sound with pre-recorded material.
And even when you've got the Bomb Squad or DJ Premier, it's like they are generally adding something of like an 808, just
always,
to like always something in addition to the samples. Not always, but frequently enough that it's still, there's enough in
always.
The sample.
I can't think of too many hip-hops. What's funny is every now and then like Ghostface Killah will literally just rap over the song. Like, he'll leave the vocals in and everything. And
yeah, that can be
put
cool.
his vocals over it. But that's essentially what they did here. Like, there's no, to be clear, there's no band session of D-Light in the
that's
studio
recording. That's
right.
There are no instruments that they're playing. Although, on stage later on, and Dimitri is a performer, and you mentioned the song.
He was in a band before.
Many bands before. Actually, they all, part of the backstory is that they were all failing, and Lady Miss Keir felt bad for him. And so, like, the whole origin of the band was a little bit, like, you know, trying to help him have his band fantasy come to life. And live he does sometimes early footage of the band. Actually, they would be, he would be playing guitar and sometimes he plays keyboards, but for this song none of that's happening. They didn't add any keyboards, any live instrumentation, except and we'll get to this in a minute, there are some live horns, and they're not just any horn players.
Oh,
these
yes.
are some special horn players.
There's a story there. We'll get to that. But you have some samples you want to play for us, so what do you want to play for us first?
All right, so let's start with that drum beat. This is a sample from a song by Vernon Birch from 1979. It's called Get Up. That's what it sounds like. There's a little drum break, and they sample the drum break. That's a in classic hip-hop slash dance music tradition.
Yeah, it's all about the breaks.
You find a bar where there's nothing else happening but beats, and you grab that.
And you grab it.
You grab it.
Do me a favor. Play this song from the beginning, though.
And here's how it goes into that break. Here we go.
That's so crazy.
Oh, don't forget this other part of the song, which you're about to recognize. Here it comes. That crucial whistle.
This is not my theory. This is somebody else said. But they were like, they probably could have gotten away with sampling this. And, you know, maybe people wouldn't have been able to figure out what song they had sampled. But it's almost like they left in the slide whistle just so they could be like, hey, guys, we're not trying to be sneaky here.
Yeah.
It's that song that you know.
You know, I did a deep dive on this with the help of my friend on the inside, who I mentioned on a previous episode. And while we don't know on the master side, in the era, they sometimes paid $100 to the record label, like on Paul's Boutique, a lot of these big sampling records.
Mm-hmm.
When they didn't just try and get away with it, which history does, there's no record of which samples they did that on, they would often pay a pretty small sum because this was the early days of sampling.
Yeah, nobody knew how much to charge for this stuff.
You know what? It really depended. And sometimes they just tried to get away with it. On the publishing side, I can tell you definitively that the only sample that was cleared on the publishing side
was the Herbie Hancock.
Was the Herbie Hancock one, which forms the basis, that main bass line that runs through the entire song.
All right, well, that's super fascinating. What's the next sample you have for us?
Well, let's keep it moving. There's a lot of percussion breaks. I'll just really quickly run through them because all of these play the part, and actually this is kind of a cool expression the artists themselves used, because they have these kind of building blocks of the song, that main drum beat, that main Herbie Hancock thing, but then they would have a lot of these little momentary, what they called fill-ins. So it's a really, like, just for a moment, something happens just to have more oral interest.
Stuff happening.
By the way, when I say oral interest, I mean A-U-R-A-L, because there's more than one kind of
nobody
oral interest.
Nobody thought that until you just clarified.
As it came out of my mouth, I realized that it could have been,
As it came out of your mouth.
Oh, okay, you know what? Give the guy a break. Oral interest can mean many things.
The
in
one
this
song,
show,
the one song nation knows A-U-R-A-L.
That's a good presumption. If I'm saying oral, I probably mean
they're a very smart listener. They're
they
a very smart. They download every week and they're with us.
That
anyway,
phoneme is reserved for audio.
Let's hear some of these oral fixations that you have coming up for us.
That's not what they are. This is one of the percussion breaks from Ray Beretta's "Right On," 1972. Right? You recognize this? I'll play it for you.
Yeah,
in the mix.
That's a really noticeable.
Yeah, that's right before the second verse.
Watch out!
Right, exactly. Yeah. I'll play it in the mix now. Watch out! Watch out!
By the way, I knew exactly where
you knew exactly
Bootsy
where that was.
Chimed in with a watch out. So props to me too.
Well done. Well done.
Start me for a compliment.
Let's play just a couple more of these percussion moments. This is fun. I like to isolate the scratches sometimes, and you can hear how imprecise they were because this is a human, presumably DJ Toate, literally on the decks, scratching this in for oral interest. That's pretty good. And he
like
does it later. Here's another scratch.
The old helicopter scratch. What is that? What is that sound?
I don't know. It's hard to say.
By the way, that could be, I'm sure somebody in the comments will let us know.
Yeah.
Oh, man, come on. But that's what the comments sound like to me. But sometimes as a DJ, you get those, you used to get records, and now it's like an MP3 file of just like sound effects. And just like a person, I got it.
That's right.
Just like,
Acapella's Anonymous.
There's
some famous.
And you could just scratch on those.
DJ Tool Records. Exactly.
DJ Tools.
I'm going to say some of my favorite fill-ins for when we get to the vocal section.
Okay. No problem.
And there's two in particular that are so funny to me and exciting to present.
There you go.
But let's finish up with some of these instruments. We talked about the Herbie Hancock loop, so I won't play that again. But I will mention, by the way, the Bring Down the Birds, which is the core of the song. It does bear mentioning that this is Ron Carter on bass, who any Tribe fan will know because he appears on Low End Theory. And he is, I just learned, according to the Guinness Book of World Record, he is the most recorded jazz bassist in history. So that's him playing that Herbie Hancock bass line. Okay, so what's interesting about the song, we've talked about Bootsy a few times. Now we get to just pause and talk about Bootsy's importance to not just the song, but to the genre of funk in general. Now, Bootsy Collins, we've been alluding to him. He is the voice on this record, which is funny because he's actually one of the greatest bass players. Yeah, he's got that like
Baby Bubba.
I don't even know how you describe that voice. It's kind of cartoon. He's kind of a living cartoon.
He's a cartoon character in the most respectful, cool way that I can say he's a cartoon. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, you look at him in the early days with Parliament and Funkadelic, like, he's Bootsy. And, you know, thank God, you know, we still have this institution.
Oh, and thank God he met George Clinton, right? So he starts out with his brother. He's playing for James Brown's band for not very long. Like, that's where he gets his start. I think he's 18 or 19. It's only 11 months, but he's doing, like, he does Sex Machine, Superbad, Soul Power, like some of the classic tracks of that era, which is the best James Brown era. But, you know, when he's in that band, he meets some other band members. He meets members when he's with James Brown. He meets Fred Wesley on trombone. He meets Maceo Parker the Horny Horns. And when one day Lady Miss Keir, before they're signed, she sends just a fan letter to Bootsy Collins saying, "We love you." I think she sends a demo version.
Oh, that makes so much
she
sense.
She sends their demo to him, and he writes back and says, "Look, if you're ever in the studio, give me a call." And she's elated. She does a dance. And one day that call comes because they get signed to Elektra. The groove is in the heart. They're recording it. They're like, "Let's call Bootsy." Bootsy's like, "Yeah, I'm down." And he comes in. He puts on that vocal track, which we'll play some isolated in a minute. He does not play bass, interestingly enough.
Makes sense. Yeah, nobody's playing bass.
There's no bass needed because we got Ron Carter already.
Already got the sample. Yeah.
But he does bring Fred and Maceo from the Horny Horns.
That's fantastic.
So the only music added to samples and vocals that are original are the Horny Horns. And here they are. Here's the horn line. Take it away, Maceo and Fred. It's funny because to my ear, we talked about this on another episode, like in the mix, which I'll play for you now, it's blending with another line. So the melody that I had heard in my head was different because when you hear it together, it sounds like this. I thought it was dun 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 dun, but it's just a fraction of that. And you know why? I'm just seeing it now because that horn line is interplaying with this sample. It's just that, and then the horn plays, and then this happens. So I'll just play them together. That's so cool. You can tell that Maceo and Fred were listening to the track and being like, you know, let's play where there isn't something already and give it like a dialogue. So I'll now play those two things together. So it's almost like they're responding to another band member, but it's Ron Carter, you know, recorded 15 years earlier.
By the way, that was my favorite part of the horns, was that.
That's so great. That little line. That really makes it.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I'm embarrassed to say that, but, you know, it was a function of my age. The first time I ever saw Bootsy was probably in this video.
Oh, definitely me too.
And the first time
Had he been for 10 years?
The first time I ever heard the phrase horny horns was in a Paula Abdul song. I mean, in a funky way. Horny horns. And I was like, what is she talking about? But by the way, that was also like an early house song that I feel like could have easily been played in some of these, not the most underground, but like sort of like pop underground New York house music parties at that period. Yeah, here it comes.
That's so funny. I've never heard this song. It's so funny hearing it. Is that like it's so contextually a house track that could not exist without D-Light and Vogue coming before it.
Absolutely.
To sort of steer the ship on what the housiness is.
This sounds like the Paula Abdul that was probably going to the Glam Slam and like trying to like get Prince to write
her. I hear that too. You're right.
Next album. And I love that. Like that's like That's like the fun piano driven
yes.
early 90s house music that, you know, was just kind of on our radar. We didn't know there was a whole culture that went with it. But like I hear it on Madonna's Deeper and Deeper.
Totally.
You know, great yeah. track. Somebody should bring that sound back because it's very
specific
catchy.
Pop house overlap where it's not house. Being spun in the deep house clubs at 3 a.m. necessarily. Maybe for fun it is actually. But it's not like one of those early Masters at Work, like, you know,
no.
seminal tracks.
It's not Lil Louis Vega. But it was the house that made it to, you know, a relatively not
Top
suburban
40.
House, but like a house in Zone 4 in Atlanta in the early 90s where I was listening. Not everything in this song is a sample.
That's very true.
Somebody did actually go into the studio. Lady of the Cure, what do you have from her?
Yeah, we've got all the vocals that are, well, I'm already going to edit what I just said. Half of the vocals, all of the like melodic vocals, I should say, uh-huh. come from Lady Miss Keir. And then there's these wonderful, there are two different raps happening. And I've got some outtakes from that, from Bootsy's rap that wasn't fully used. And of course, Q-Tip, we're going to hear from him. But then the other half of the song's vocals are from these wonderful samples. And some of them are amazing.
Yeah.
And these are the little interspersed fill-ins that I was mentioning before.
Awesome.
So all together, they comprise the vocals. Let's start with Lady Miss Keir.
The chills that you spill up my back keep me filled with satisfaction when we're done. Satisfaction of what's to come. I couldn't ask for another.
Man, those vocals are actually, I don't want to say that they're better. I always knew she could sing, but like yeah. they actually sound like more robust and sexy
it's
than
really
I expected.
Rich, right?
Yeah,
really warm, really,
really cool.
rich. And she's... It's really fun sounding too. Like that's
there's so many
a big
sounds
part of this
in the
track.
Song. I guess you can actually forget that at the heart of it is actually a really good
yes
vocal.
The song
singer.
Would not work yeah. if it was just all these incredible samples.
Yeah.
It would. It's Lady Miss Keir is the heartbeat of all of it.
Yeah,
and
totally.
Of course the lyrics and the message. You know, she's always her. The album is called World Click, and so much about who she is as a person, as an individual, is there's so much virtue and beauty and like love that comes from
yeah.
her. She talks about on the record, you know, that the world is a global village. There's songs on later records about like global warming. She's very much kind of bringing a message, which actually, now I think about it, is a very kind of hippie message, right? It brings that into the music. So, well, let's just play a few more moments of that delicious, iconic vocal. I'm just never going to stop saying iconic. Just stop trying to make me.
Groove is in the heart. Groove is in the heart. Groove is in the heart. Groove is in the heart.
Is that everybody's favorite part? That little swoop. No, groove! That little swoop
yeah,
in the
yeah.
fourth
the
repeat.
The whole thing works.
Yeah, the whole thing works.
Mean,
it's beautiful.
What a freaking good voice.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's maybe the part I did not anticipate about yeah. actually hearing this.
You know, it's funny. I've been thinking about this band a little bit because you can go back on YouTube. There's all this great like live footage of them. So their earliest performances are all these sort of East Village like nightclubs. You know what I mean? Like this is a band that forms out of dance music, which reminds me a little bit of the Massive Attack story,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, there's a lot of
this
overlap.
This is a DJ-centric yeah. artist entity where they're writing songs that are sort of poppy, but it's coming from a DJ perspective of piecing together with the skills that they have
yeah.
and the instruments
and same
the samplers
I mean,
they
same
have.
Same rough period
roughly
of the 90s,
same period.
Yeah.
But also the performance is taking place not in a rock band setting,
yeah.
but in a dancing setting. It's open air, I suppose, in Jamaica and in the Massive Attack Bristol example. But here, this is an East Village nightclub, and it's the classic live PA situation where you've got a backing track, you've got lots of dancers.
Mm-hmm.
It's really about the show. And the song, it's not to say it's secondary, but it's a little bit secondary. You're in this gay nightclub in the late 80s, and it's a big show, and there's 20 people on stage having a blast. And I was just struck by how that kind of reminds me. You mentioned the B-52s. They have a party background, too.
Yeah.
Later on, Scissor
playing
Sisters.
Parties in Athens, Georgia.
Scissor Sisters have a similar beginning. East Village.
It wouldn't shock me.
Yeah.
In fact, I'd love to do a Scissor Sisters episode because
yeah.
that first album was
it's so
mind-blowing.
Great. It's so,
so cool.
great. And very similar beginnings where it's East Village. It's backing track with like performance more than it is like we're a band and we're rocking you.
Yeah.
So it's interesting the connection between all of those bands.
Absolutely. Did you want to play another vocal?
Yeah, let's keep it going. Maybe this is everyone's favorite part. The Horton Hears a Who.
The depth of hula groove moves us to the nth hoop. We're going through to Horton Hears a Who.
You want to hear that with a harmony? Let's layer that a little bit.
the depth of hula groove moves us to the anthoop. We'll go through to what here's a hoo.
Now, I will say, I don't know what I thought she was saying there. I definitely didn't hear anything about the nth hoop, and I definitely didn't catch Horton Hears a Who. So, you know, we didn't have the internet, guys. Like, it was so easy to
just
sing whatever you thought the person was singing back
then. Just phonemes. Ba 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 bee boo. All right, so the thing I want to play next is Q-Tip's verse. But before we get into that, Diallo, I know you're a fan. We're both fans of Tribe Called Quest, but you're an especially deep fan. So please talk to me about Q-Tip.
Well, look, I mean, this is not going to be our Tribe Called Quest episode. Obviously, we're both
We will be doing one. We will definitely
We're going to do one once in the work. But to me, this is a part of what Q-Tip has done for so long, which is he jumps from genre to genre. And he shows up in just some amazing songs. He, you know, this was one of the first times, obviously, that we got to see his versatility. This song came out before Low End Theory, which is kind of blows my mind. But, you know, I think about the song Bang, Bang, Bang that he did with Mark Ronson.
On the plane, on my brain, about to do the show. 40K contract, take it out the door. Dice symbolize my life, roll them on the floor. From your grubby hands, as you hammer grandstand, you live
a... A Little Party Never Killed Nobody off of the Great Gatsby soundtrack. I think it was like a Fergie song, but of course Q-Tip came on for the lyrics. I find him to be a music fan like us. And so it doesn't surprise me that he's an early adopter of the idea that a rapper can show up on anything, an R&B song. He can produce. He produced, you know, like he was, I believe the producer on the first two hip hop songs that he ever popped up on, the Jungle Brothers. I think he produced two songs for them and had his own verse on those even before People's Instinctive Travels. So, you know, Q-Tip
that's where he came
just,
up with the name for the band, right? In that verse?
Yeah. That's where he renames the group Tribe Called Quest. So yeah. I think that, you know, and he produces so many of the... When you discover that Q-Tip is actually the force behind some of the most artistically sampling hip-hop tracks that Tribe Called Quest has released, the fact that he remixed Nas and he remixed so many people in the 90s and the 2000s, you know, before he ever gets to even Vibrant Thing.
Yeah, special girl, real good girl, biggest thing in my itty bitty world. Call her up and she made me feel right. Wish the bliss could never take flight.
Which is enjoying a second life right now as the sample basis of a dance track called Dust. Right now in 2024, he's got that versatility and he knows how to come in and do hip hop on a song that may not technically be hip hop, but make it feel like it's hip hop. And I'm just always been a supporter. I'm going to give a shout out real quick to his solo album, which was called Kamal the Abstract. And there was a song on there called Even If It Is So, which I just, every time I hear it, it gives me chills. It's just one of those great hip hop songs.
Has so much work that I haven't even like delved into, which is true of so many of my favorite artists. I haven't heard every David Bowie song, but like I'm gonna check that out because
he's just firmly this New York guy.
Yeah,
you know, this rapper who, you know, if he had been alive at the time, he would have done the rap verse on Blondie's "The Rapture." You know what I mean? Yeah. Like he's just that guy.
That's, you know what? It's interesting you said that because the backstory about how he got connected to this song, I'll tell you just really quickly. The story that Lady Miss Keir herself tells is, she said, this is before Tribe blew up.
Yeah.
He was hanging with the Jungle Brothers, and we opened for them one time at a club called Hotel Amazon. We played that song live, and he asked if he could do 16 bars on it.
I also heard, I mean, maybe it's the same story, but I also heard that Tawate knew Africa Baby Bomb, who is a member of the Jungle Brothers.
Maybe that's the connection. Maybe that's they were on that show together. That would make sense. Well, the other story, which we're about to hear the bars themselves, Dimitri explains how when he came into the studio, all he had was a notepad. He just started writing. This is a quote from DJ Dimitri from D-Light. As we were laying down Bootsy's part, he started writing. He just listened to the song and said, give me 15 minutes. And then he goes in and he lays down the rap and the backup vocal. Two takes and he was in and he was out.
There you go.
There you go.
Let's hear a little bit of that.
Flowing, glowing with electric eyes. You dip to the dive, baby, you'll realize. Baby, you'll see the funk inside of me. Baby, you'll see that rhythm is a key. Get witty, witty, can't think quitty, quitty. Stomp on a stoop when I hear a funk loop. Playing Pied Piper, follow Hood's troop. Baby, just sing about the groove.
Man, you know, People think they can rap until you try and do rap at like karaoke night. And then you realize, oh, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. It takes so much breath control and, you know, with nothing else around it, you realize just how difficult it would be to both write that and to perform.
I'm not hearing any punching in and out. That is the one take that we were told just took place.
That's amazing. By the way, I think growing up, the only part I knew was, baby, just sing about
the groove. Yeah, just know how it ends.
I think I remember Electric Torso. I remember thinking that was kind of like a cool thing.
Well, and just for fun, here is his second take where he does the back, where he's responding to his first take.
Something lurks in this torso. Yeah. Hawk got a deal you wanna know. Delightful, truly delightful. Life making it, doing it, especially at a show. Feeling kind of high like a Hendrix haze. Music makes motions, moves like a maze. All inside of me, heart especially. Yeah. Help of the rhythm.
And by the way, another cool thing that I hope people notice there is like he's not even doing like, you know, A, B, B, C, C rhyme scheme. Like, there are times when, like, he goes half a bar and then rhymes it. Like, that's something that I equate more with, like, Nas, you know, about 3 years after this song.
Right, yeah,
who
you're right.
Would, like, cut the bar in half and then just make it rhyme with that first half of that one bar. And, like,
maybe a little Rakim in there, too.
Q-Tip is doing it right here. Yeah. Well, the thing about Rakim is that I think that, you know, he's more like what I feel like people thought rap was. And KRS-One, like, it was, like, hard. And Q-Tip is really one of those first. Obviously, there's Slick Rick. There are a lot of people who are rapping smooth, but the Abstract Poet, aka Q-Tip, aka Kamal, he was really rhyming smooth early on, and it's easy to forget that he's one of the first people to do that.
It's incredible. Yeah, such a great verse. What a perfect segue into the third but not least important voice on this record, which is Bootsy himself, who interjects all these really crucial... We're talking about the fill-ins with the samples. He does the same kind of thing with his little silly interjections. So let's play a few of those.
Let's hear them.
Let me give you a plug, sweet lips, while I'm on the air. Now bend over my body and rub your fingers through my hair. Your mouth run like water, a very beautiful sight. Now put on my favorite group, they call themselves Delight.
Now, I have never heard that in my life.
I think that's not on the final. That's not in the song, but that is on some of the remixes. Use some of his.
I was like, that shit must be way buried in the mix.
No. It's not in the final version, but it is. That was used in one of the like remixes, I believe. Yeah, no, Bootsy's got a whole rap, actually. He's got several different sections of the song that he just kind of writes his own little poetry like that.
Your wish is my command. As the magic flow through my hand, I'd like to take this moment to make a rendezvous with you. Tis the season to be funky. Not that I'm an oversex junkie. I just want to make contact and then chill and
Why didn't they include that stuff?
A lot of that stuff went to the 12-inch. I think they just were like, you know, we can't put it in the single version. They ended up just using his little like moments like...
That's the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dig.
Right. It's literally that dig. That's dig. That's so crucial, though. Just this one.
Dig.
I remember it.
That's memorable.
I remember Watch Out.
Is that the next one? Let's see.
No, that's right.
I remember that one, too.
Astronomical.
I never
what does
knew
he say
what he
there?
Said. That's astronomical.
Oh, I thought he said something about a monocle.
Astronomical.
There's the gold right there. Astronomical.
But for the record, it sounds like he says astronomical. Listen to it again.
Astronomical.
There's a distinct M sound in there.
But there is no word.
No, I know. I think it's a flub. But it's hilarious. And it's awesome.
Astronomical. Yeah. Bounce that body.
Ooh.
There's not a dud in here. It's all gold.
Yeah. Bounce that body. Groove is in the heart.
I think they used that.
Yeah. Succotash.
I never thought of succotash as being filthy, but now I'm going to think twice about ordering.
And then, of course, the song ends with.
Come on, y'all. Y'all are crazy, man.
Lots of really.
He sounded like he was ready to get out of there and get to the club. He's like, was that cool?
Are we done yet? Because I've given you my best. Now, we can't conclude the samples without, as promised, getting to some of those little fill-ins that are from these random Exotica and 60s records that are part of the vocal but are actually samples. They're not musical samples. They're little thingy samples. One of my favorite samples is, of course, we all know that I couldn't dance with another.
Yeah, what is that?
So this is a really fun sample because it actually comes from this. This is the Green Acres theme from 1966. And that little moment is Eva Gabor right here.
So
remember that sound?
Is that Eva or Jaja? I think that's Jaja Gabor.
That's Eva Gabor.
Okay.
And in the mix, they've taken that and they've done a kind of classic early sampling thing where you just go,
It's a sampler.
That's,
yeah,
that's
awesome.
Akai, the $500 that she found in the back of the cab.
It's made so many hits.
Went to sampling Eva Gabor from Green Acres and doing
I.
And then, more importantly,
I.
Which is so like Two of Hearts, I Need You, which had already come out, which, by the way, I need you. Just
wow.
That connection, right?
I love it. I mean, there's something about a good sampler used as a percussive instrument that will never get old.
Because Stacey... Right? That I trope came from 1986's Stacey Q hit, Two of Hearts.
But I mean, hip-hop was doing it before Stacey Q.
There's an I trope.
No, what I'm saying, like, taking a sample on a sampler and...
Yeah. No, I'm just saying, like, the trope of it being the word I...
Oh, okay.
It's sort of a fun connection that I just drew there. So that's coming from Green Acres, the TV show. And this other sample, if you've got children... cover their ears just for the next little moment, because what I have been in my notes, I call the motorboat sound. I'll play it for you in the mix. Has a pretty funny origin, but it is a little bit not safe for work.
Okay.
And the source is going to blow your mind.
Uh-oh.
And offend your children.
Guys, turn it off. Dad says turn it off.
This is a track called Hateful Head Helen by Sweet Pussy Pauline. And the song is called Work This Pussy.
What genre of the music is this?
The song is called Work This Pussy.
On the tip of the ant-eater. Ooh, shit. This motherfucker was screaming, Miss Head, Miss Head, Miss Head. Now, fellas.
They used the acapella because this came from a house record. So they had the acapella, which I'll play for you now, which is even, it's even better.
They want to put their face in our asses and go, but they don't know how to ask.
Never get tired. The context, that's the best sample
again,
context.
I feel like this whole song
I've ever heard. Name a better sample context. I'll wait.
I can't even. Mine
Green, you thought Green Acres was great? Oh, Green Acres.
I think Green Acres is still probably my preferred. But I will say this. This, to me, this whole song seems like a collage of like albums and songs that Dimitri and maybe Taote as well were playing in
Absolutely.
Their set, and they're like, let's take our favorite moments from like all these, this word,
because
this beat,
you're absolutely
this,
right,
this hand clap,
because
this tambourine,
physically their ability to do that existed with the record they already owned and were playing and the sampler. Suddenly it's like, we can make music now with these tools.
By the way, we haven't even mentioned it, they were playing and performing the song as early as 1989.
Yeah.
So like, this is a song they probably crafted in 1988, which is nuts.
That's right.
Which
That's
is
right.
nuts.
They were crafting it. And then the final icing on the cake
was
Work This Pussy a cappella.
There you go. I think you're just like looking me in my eye and saying this. Now for the sample I'm most excited about. The one part of this song that I even my young brain knew had to be a sample. But back in the pre-internet days, we had no way of looking up what a sample, you know, but I could tell it came from another song.
Right.
And it's the very beginning of the song. It's bum, 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 would
right.
you like to dance? And like, it's so a part of this song, but
it
you're
leads
about
in the
to
whole
play.
Vibe. And you're absolutely right to point out that it, because it is the beginning of the song, it instantly gives you the vibe for the song.
And you could tell it like
that it's again, old, it's kind of weird. Like,
I hadn't DJed before. I could tell this sounded like a record skipping. Mm-hmm. You know, it sounded like a very clear loop.
Yeah.
I am so thrilled to share this with you guys because I can guarantee a lot of you have not looked this song up before. I know I haven't. Luxury, will you please play us the song they sampled for the first sample in the song?
This is from the album, The Art of Belly Dancing, 1969.
Love it.
Belshazzar, Tommy Genopopoulos, and the Grecian Knights.
We're going to dance and exercise and have some fun so that you will fully enjoy yourself. How about getting into some loose clothing?
I mean, I'm going to say right now, listen to this on YouTube. It is such a cool, cool song. Shout out to all the belly dancers out there. I wish I had known
we
this
We have
was
a lot
song.
Of belly dancers
I
in
I would have
audience.
Mixed this in to some of my DJ sets early
it's
on. Because the song is incredible. It is really cool. It's just the nature of music law. We can't play that much of the song here on the show, but when the show's over, please go off and listen to it. It's a really cool song.
Right. Well, now's as good a chance as any to plug our one song playlist, which does exist on Spotify. We forget to mention it almost every episode, but we do have every song we play on the episode in one easy to use playlist format. So just go to Spotify and search one song. I added the word interpolation there to the title to make it easily found. And yeah, you can just relive both the episode and then listen to all the songs afterwards.
Right? I need a catchphrase. Yeah. I need a catchphrase.
Every, you know what?
We're not catchphrase balanced right now.
I think your catchphrase is shout out. Like last time we talked
that
about it.
That is not my.
But then you went on in the episode to use shout out many times in that same episode.
Not
well,
my tag is
the burden of effort is on you to come up with the better.
No, I think it's on the listeners. Listeners, DM me on Instagram.
What should Diallo's catchphrase
Diallo, be? Diallo, and tell me what my catchphrase should be. I need a catchphrase.
Maybe that they should demand. Maybe there should be some sort of like, I don't know, prize,
a prize?
For the
yes.
best.
We'll come up with a prize.
What would the prize
the
be?
Person with the winning catchphrase.
Gets their name mentioned.
We're
on
gonna
the show.
We're gonna not only mention your name, but we're gonna get you something nice.
All right, so Diallo, D-Light are sometimes categorized as a one-hit wonder, which rubs me the wrong way a little bit, but I understand where they would get that impression. This is a monster hit, and there wasn't really anything after this that was quite as monstrous.
Mm.
So neither of us think that's fair. We'll talk about that in a minute, but let me ask you this.
Yeah.
What other acts are unfairly categorized as one-hit wonders? Let's set the record straight.
Oh, well, you know, I actually have a little bit of an issue with the phrase one-hit wonder.
Yeah.
Obviously, there are some bands and artists for which this is true. It usually
right, said
comes...
Fred, we're looking at you.
But, you know, I did some research on this matter, right? And Rolling Stone did a list of, like, the top 10 one-hit wonders where they listed D-Light alongside, like, Chumbawamba and Harvey Danger.
No.
I'm like,
not
you
fair.
Know, by the way, the same list had The Verve. It had House of Pain. I'm not even the biggest House of Pain fan,
yeah,
but like that first album was actually really good. And the second album had some basically some other groups. And I was just like, what? I feel like one hit wonder usually comes from a place of ignorance. I think I've seen Blur on these lists, by the
way.
I've seen Blur's song too on these lists. It's insane to me. It's very to me like, were they big enough in the United States? Because usually it's an artist who had a very full and happy career, not on these shores. So I don't know if I believe in one-hit wonders as applied here, but I will turn the question. I don't think of D-Light as a one-hit wonder. Maybe a one-album wonder? Is that a
They've
fair
got,
thing?
Well,
but I'm asking you.
I agree. So I'm going to build on what you say. I think the phenomenon of calling it a one-hit wonder speaks to the speaker of that sentence, not necessarily being a musician or even an artist themselves, because it implies that it's just the numerical value of units shipped or chart positions that determines the validity. Because to call somebody a one-hit wonder is to demean them. It's essentially to say
it's definitely pejorative.
You only did one thing that was important, and everything after that doesn't matter, which I find like kind of offensive as an artist. So, you know, the thing specifically with D-Light I can address is, again, the album itself. First of all, Power of Love is arguably as good, if not a better. That's the song I'm more likely to DJ, for example, than Groove Is in the Heart. So the whole record, though, World Click, has lots of bangers on it. And I bought the two follow-ups. And the second one was a bit, I will admit, I wasn't so crazy about the second record when it came out. It was a bit disappointing. But the third record is incredible. And I'm going to play something from that record a little bit later on the episode. But, you know, D-Light, I think, certainly peaked with this song in terms of their global appeal and their ability to get, you know, booked for shows, etc. It's definitely the case that when I've tracked their post-band experiences, it seems like Towa Tay has had a pretty good career.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, like, that's my other problem with calling them one-hit wonders, because, you know, the individual pieces of this band have gone on to do such great stuff. You know, one song that I wanted to play is Towa Tay's Technova.
Oh, perfect.
Because, you know, it's a very catchy tune. Some of the people listening will probably know it.
Bebel Gebetel.
And by the way, you know, let's hear a little bit of that.
So good. This is so the sound of 1994 or whatever. Mid-90s.
Like, it's such a great song. And by the way, just to close the loop on that, Q-Tip comes on Groove is in the Heart. Tawa Tay releases that song, Technova. And then Q-Tip finds a way.
Interpolation.
He finds a way. Well, here, check this out. He finds a way to sample it for the song Find a Way. And it's part of a special genre of hip-hop where I love that they sample something and the thing that they're saying is not what is technically being said. I'll explain it on the other side. Check this out.
Now you caught my heart for the evening. Kiss my cheek, moved in, you confused things. Should I just sit out or come harder? Help me find my...
So I'm sure you can hear the sample in there. She's singing in Portuguese. You know, she's a Brazilian singer. I love that Fife is singing English words that sound kind of like what she's singing, but it's not at all what she's singing.
It's a sample and an interpolation happening at the same time.
So Tawa Tay, we followed his career. Yeah. By the way, he's come out with some really good albums in just the last 3 years. He comes out with an album almost every year recently. I would say go check him out. One of those albums is called LP. It's a really good album. Worth checking out.
I think he's got a glasses line, too.
He's
got those iconic glasses. I think he puts out his own glasses.
I believe it. And he lives in like a really remote part of Japan now. He lives the life. He just puts out albums, and he lives in this mountainous region. I think it's Nagano.
Oh, wow.
It's like the furthest part of Japan from the ocean in any direction. So he's as far
Sounds
from the
cool.
ocean.
He just as listens he can to his get. Records all day and makes just design
great,
sunglasses.
Really cool records. Check out LPs. I think it's 2021's. What about Super DJ Dimitri?
So, I looked into what happened to Lady Miss Keir and Dimitri. They don't really have much of an internet presence after a certain point, but I know that Lady Miss Keir has been DJing for many years. It's sort of her primary thing.
I know she's like
thing,
got a very like activist streak.
Very big activist streak. Absolutely there. Right. So, she's continuing the sort of same philosophy that she's always been doing. Yeah. She's just making art in the world, sort of touring, doing DJ stuff.
That's
and
great.
It's kind of funny because I was looking at what happened to DJ Dimitri. He moved to Berlin and ended up marrying, I won't say a friend of mine, but someone who I know from the San Francisco scene who randomly ended up there. This woman, Jesse Evans, who's a musician that I remember from San Francisco back in the day, wound up in Berlin and wound up marrying Dimitri Brill, and they have a band together called Naughty Siren. And
so he's still in bands.
He's still making music. And,
that's amazing. Good for him.
Yeah, doing it in Berlin.
I love that.
Yeah.
So all of them, you know, doing well, and you know, if they ever reach out to the show, maybe we'll have them on.
Sounds That'd good. We'd really love cool. to have them on.
Okay. Before we go, we're going to do one more song. This is the part of the show where we share a new song with you, the One Song Nation, and with each other a lot of times, because obviously I don't know what you're going to share. You don't know what I'm going to share. Lecture, you go first. What do you got for me?
Well, as I promised, you know, D-Light's third record in particular, it's called Dewdrops in the Garden. That was so slept on. And like, I actually returned to that record a lot, like over the years, just like it dawns on me, like I want to hear, especially this song in particular, which is called Apple Juice Kissin'. It's just a really fun song. And it's a very New York in the summer kind of song. It has that vibe going for it.
Okay.
I just, one thing that's fun about that song is, you know, this song, Groove is in the Heart, was one of the first songs where we've talked about how we had in our, you know, we were younger then, we didn't necessarily know how music was made, but we recognized that there were samples in it.
Mm-hmm.
That was the beginning of that mode where I was starting to be like, well, what was the sample? Where did it come from? And of course, kids today don't know. There was no Who Sampled back then. There was no YouTube. There was no Shazam. So sometimes in life, you would just go for months or years, and then you'd be in a cafe and you'd hear the break in the full song that it came from, and you would just add, well, this is me, I would say you. I would add that to my mental Rolodex.
Yeah,
I would add that to my mental Rolodex. So I just bring that up because this song has a couple of really fun connections I'll quickly take you to. One is that introduction comes from this song by The Clash. This is Armageddon Time. Which is a cover of this song by Willie Williams.
A lot of people won't get no supper tonight.
Which last but not least relies on the rhythm from this famous song, which is called Real Rock Sound Dimension. This is a classic, Studio One classic. So this is the fourth and final layer of that song. And I actually lied, there's a fifth layer, but I'm not going to get into it. But just part of what I love about the phenomenon of sampling is the storytelling and the layers. And over the years, you start to be like, oh, wait. And you hear a new thing that connects it to the previous thing. So I didn't know some of these layers until many years later. But Delight, I have to thank for being one of the first bands that unlocked the beauty of sampling for me outside of hip-hop.
That's really cool.
Diallo, what about you? Do you have a one more song for me?
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about Q-Tip earlier, and I revisited his... you know, one of his later albums, solo albums. And I might have even mentioned it earlier in the show, but the name of the song is Even If It Is So. And it's one of those songs that I think is just, it builds, and it's just wonderful. And this is Q-Tip, a.k.a. Kamal, and the song is Even If It Is So.
In the back room, reason up. Friday night is eating up. Young cats tricking up. Dancing so they give it up. The best girl walking nerve. And you know, for what it's worth, working towards a better life, regardless if she working nights.
So that snippet won't really do it justice. You have to sort of listen to the whole, I think it's about a 6-minute track, but it's really a great song.
It gives me such joy when I'm reminded that artists that I love have more work that I haven't been exposed to, that I haven't heard yet. So, like, I'm so excited to go and dig deep into Kamal's career.
Yeah. And I assure you that at some point we will do a Tribe Called Quest episode. I worked with Q-Tip on the Maya Rudolph show briefly, middle of last decade. So if we can get him on the show, we will do that.
And that would be a dream. Absolutely.
Insane. Absolutely.
Come on the show, Q-Tip.
As always, if you have an idea for one more song, reach out to us. The best way to reach me is on Instagram. I am at D-I-A-L-L-O. And on TikTok, I am at Diallo Riddle.
And I am at Luxury, L-U-X-X-U-R-Y on Instagram, or at LuxuryXX on TikTok. As always, we love it. If you like the show, please tell your friends, share it with them, give it 5 stars and a nice review. It really helps. Really helps.
If you're going to give us 1 star, just
Every episode, we're going to complain about the 1 star. It was just one dude one time. And it's so annoying because we're like 4.9 on all the platforms.
Oh, that guy. And he was wrong.
He was wrong
about the Beatles.
He was wrong.
All right. Help me end this thing, Luxury.
All right. Well, I am producer, DJ, musicologist, Luxury.
And I'm actor, writer, director, and sometimes DJ, Diallo Riddle.
And this is One Song. We will see you next time. This episode was produced by Matthew Nelson with engineering from Marcus Hom. Additional production from... additional production support from Casey Simonson. The show is executive produced by Kevin Hart, Mike Stein, Mike Stein, Brian Smiley, Eric Eddings, Eric Weil, and Leslie Guam.
Goodbye.
Did you hear that? That's what an estimated 500 horsepower sounds like. Don't give it to you. How about that? That's a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system with 18 speakers and a Beosonic sound experience. And that's our legacy. You ready to be a part of it? Let's go, give it to you. Unlock the energy of the all-electric ZDX Type S. Order now at Acura.com.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.